Gebredung so durch den Kopf gehen los, ja, ob ich überhaupt noch etwas so kann, dann ist ja schon mal die erste Frage.
Das Gene 7 Uhr. Radio 100,7.
Vom Advokat für Menschenrechte in Mittelamerika zum attitrierten Szenarist vom grossen britischen Cineast Ken Loach. Der Paul Leverty hat den Krieger seine Konsequenzen auf München von ganz nur Madalieft. Kein Rollus nimmt Gewalt an all ihre Formen, der kleine Leute aus der Welt von Mächtigen ausgesetzt gehen. Zum Beispiel zu Gaza oder an einem Wirtschaftssystem. Seine Erfahrungen hat Paul Leverty am Lauf von 3 Jahrzehnten an einen ganz rich sozialkritisch, politisch links engagierten drehbischen Auflesen gelos, von Carlas Song 1996 über The Wind That Shakes the Barley 2006 bis The Old Oak 2023, dem Ken Loach sei voraussichtlich der letzte Film. Bei allem politischen Engagement, das wird für den Paul Leverty an erster Linie an einem Film zielt, als eine gute Geschichte. Mein Name ist Michel Delage. Viel Spaß mit B-Radio. Keine Toleranz für Ungerechtigkeiten. Ein Gespräch mit Paul Leverty.
B-Radio. I saw how war destroys people. It breaks their spirit, how it damages them. Even the people who are the perpetrators. There is the evidence. Why do we not pay attention to it? In Russian trenches today, and the young men in Ukrainian trenches today, on both sides, they pay the price. They always pay the price. Now that's kind of fascinating how the rich and the powerful can do that, how they can create the world in their image for their benefit. These are really important things. We're talking about life, you know.
Hello, welcome to B Radio.
This is Radio Freedom.
Eh bien,
this year,
cette année,
Palme d'Or,
la Palme d'Or revient
à Daniel Blake.
I, Daniel Blake.
Good morning, Mr. Blake. I'm appointed to carry out assessments for employment and support allowance. Can you walk more than 50 metres?
Yes.
Can you raise either arm as if to put something in your top pocket?
Yes. Can I ask you a question? Are you medically qualified?
I've had a major heart attack. I've been told by my doctor I'm not supposed to go back to work yet.
2016 hat der Ken Loach am Festival von Cannes Palme d'Or für sein Sozialdrama I, Daniel Blake gewonnen. Es war schon die zweite Palme d'Or für den Duo Loach-Leverty, nur der Auszeichnung 2006 für The Wind That Shakes the Barley. I, Daniel Blake, erzählt die tragische Geschichte von einem 59 Jahre alten Schreiner, den trotz schwerer Herzkrankheit vom Arbeitsamt gezwungen wird, aktiv noch einen Schaff zu sichern. Sonst, so die Warnung, kriegt ihn der Schomersch gestracht.
I've got about 12 quid in my purse.
Do you know what? You've created a scene. All right.
Jesus Christ!
What am I supposed to do?
Who's first in this queue?
I am.
Do you mind if this young lass signs on first?
No, no, you carry on.
This isn't your concern. I want you to get out as well.
Monumental farce, isn't it? Looking for non-existent jobs. And all it does is humiliate me.
You've done nothing to be ashamed of. You're alone with 2 kids. You've done amazing.
I've seen it before. Good people. On the street. You could lose everything.
Well, I'm not going to give up. When you lose your self-respect,
Ken Loach.
Le cinéma est porteur de nombreuses traditions. L'une d'entre elles est de présenter un cinéma de protestation, un cinéma qui met en avant le peuple contre les puissants. Et ce que j'espère, c'est que cette tradition se maintiendra.
Et das net an engem Pub, so wéi den Old Oak, wo mat de Paul Laverty, den en als dem Ken Loach seng Vierdecker bezeechnen, treffen. Rendezvous ass an engem gemittlechen Hotel am Zentrum vun der Stadt, do wo d'Organisation vum Luxemburg City Film Festival seng illustrer Gäscht ënnerbringt. Paul Laverty ass Member vun der internationaler Jury vun der 15. Edition vum Lux Filmfest.
For the right seat, Trump.
Ihr den eigentlichen Interview aufhängt, lenkt Paul Laverty Gespräch direkt auf Politik. Von enger Froh über den letzten Spruch landet man beim Rechtsextremismus, auf und da aus ist Brick sehr geschlagen auf den amerikanischen Präsident Donald Trump, dem hat gestaltet Fotos von enger Luxusdestination an der Gazastreif schwärmt, während Leiche von palästinensischen Zivilisten nach einer der Ruine von den israelischen Bombardementen leihen. Paul Laverty sieht sich schockiert drüber, dass d'Impunität und Barbarei an der Zwischenzeit zum Mainstream gehören.
Maybe we should keep it for the interview, I don't know. These are really important things. We're talking about life, you know, so yeah, we should have recorded that. That was a good conversation.
Wenn wir schon beim Thema Gaza sind, heute schwätzt Paul Laverty über die britische Organisation Forensic Architecture, die mit ihrem Projekt A Cartography of Genocide Verbrechen von der israelischen Regierung und der Zivilpopulation von Gaza akribisch dokumentiert. Ein Erbisch, die, seiner Meinung nach, den Genozid ohne Zweifel geht belehren und aber ignoriert geht gehen.
And I keep talking to people about this because I think it's so important, it's been so ignored. But I think one of the most important documents of our time is something I've recently come across in London at Goldsmiths University. And I don't know if you've heard of this organization called Forensic Architecture. And I think, I really hope some of your listeners will be able to follow this up. And what they use is all the skills of professionals and their skills as architects. And what they do then is they assemble tens and tens, hundreds of thousands of information points in terms of time and location. So, and they've turned their skills to what's been happening in Gaza. And they've produced an 823-page report, which is really remarkable. But what is even more remarkable is that they've got this interactive platform. And I know this is a very sophisticated population here in Luxembourg, people who are, you know, well-prepared and professionals and, you know, speak five languages. So, and they'll recognise just the expertise and the rigour of this. This is not a political campaign. They're examining the evidence, you know, like scientists. And they've come to the conclusion that what's taking place in Gaza now is genocide, as per the Genocide Convention. For example, they'll look at the information they've got on bakeries that were destroyed, convoys that were destroyed, topsoil that has been destroyed, greenhouses, areas of agriculture. And what they do is, because they've got it on a platform, they see the patterns. And then they've done the same thing with doctors and medicine and, you know, journalists. And so it's an amazing piece of work. And it's so convincing. They're so rigorous. It's so kind of, transparent. And I think people will come and say, there is the evidence. Why did we not pay attention to it? And now their conclusions have been corroborated by Amnesty International, by American Human Rights Watch, by Medicine Sans Frontières, and they've all come to the conclusion that there's genocide. Now, if genocide is taking place, and the West, particularly my own country in the UK, has been such a backer of Israel, and not only does it not deal with this evidence, or denies it, or undermines it, to me that is collusion. In the city I come from, in Edinburgh just now, there's an arms factory called Leonardo's, and we are sending what they used to target, you know, it's part of their sites, you know, the sites on the F-35. Now, when there's that degree of evidence of genocide, that is collusion. And what does that say about our world just now? What does that say about our history, our sense of ourselves? What does it say about civilized Europe? You know, what does it say about the Geneva Conventions? It's in Europe. You know, the UN Charter, you know, the influence that, you know, European countries had, you know, how it's celebrated and our notion of ourselves. What does it say about civilised Europe when we're backing a state that's committing genocide? And again, this is not rhetoric. This is why I go back to this document. This document is absolute proof that this is taking place. So I think what we're doing just now, our whole sense of ourselves, you know, the narrative we tell about ourselves, we say we're civilised, we say we're, you know, we say we're so progressive, you know, but we are financing and defending a project which is now involved in genocide. So I think it's a remarkable document. I hope some of your listeners could go and just check it out. And what's remarkable too, the leader of it is an Israeli academic, you know? You know, so what are they going to accuse him of being anti-Semitic? You know, this is why the rigour and the fact that it's so, they're so transparent, you know, about their methodology is so impressive. And perhaps that's why it's just been totally ignored.
I see that your brain is working at full speed right now. I mean, war, the prospective of war, it's narrowing every day. Well, war has been a subject throughout your whole career, your previous life before you became a screenwriter, but also as a screenwriter, your common work with Ken Loach during the last three decades. War, as such, is a dominating theme, starting with Carla's song in the mid-90s.
Schottische Buschauffer, gespielt vom Robert Carlyle, verläuft sich an einen Refugié aus dem Nicaragua. An ihrem Heimischland gehofen die Jungfrau an ihr Umfeld Opfer von den Contras, eng von den USA-finanziert Miliz, die die Population soll terrorisieren und die Unterstützung für die Sandinistische Revolution ergreifen. Der Buschauffer decidiert, mit ihr zurück an den Nicaragua zu gehen.
To stay together.
I want you to go home, Joe.
Well, I'm not going to leave you now, Carl.
To confront the past.
Carlas Song aus dem Jahr 1996 war das erste Drehbuch, das Paul Laverty für Ken Loach geschrieben hat. Es war den ersten in einer langen Serie von Szenarien für Ken Loach, durch diese Thematik vom Krieg wie ein Blutspur zieht. Der Laverty wusste, von was er geht, schwätzen. An den 80er Jahren war er als Menschenrechtsadvokat in Mittelamerika unterwegs, darunter am Nicaragua, für die Straftaten von den Contras an anderen Rätseln Terrormilizen zu dokumentieren. Bei aller Sympathie für die demolisch-sandinistische Revolution gesagt Paul Laverty an, dass viele von den Revolutionären sich später selber zu, Zitat, Monstern entwickelt haben.
Well, I suppose we always try and tell good stories. But you're right that, you know, war has been a theme in us. I ended up writing by accident. I didn't plan to be a screenwriter. I didn't plan to be a filmmaker. But as a young lawyer, I went out to Central America in the 80s. And I was an eyewitness. You know, I was in my 20s. I was an eyewitness to what the United States did and the CIA did. They trained the Contra, the counter-revolutionaries, who were the army of the ex-dictator there of Somoza. You know, and what they did was they trained people to go and, you know, they trained them to terrorise. You know, I talked to families that had lost their children who'd been not only just killed but mutilated. You know, cut up and, you know, eyes pulled out and young women and their breasts cut off. And it was a way of terrorising the local community. You know, and so when you come face to face with that, it's really, really shocking. And so fake news has been with us for a long time. You know, Ronald Reagan and George Bush in those times said the Contra were the equivalent of our founding fathers. They were terrorists, you know, and they know that. And they terrorised this, and most of the targets were civilian. And they were trying to undermine the Sandinista revolution. And over a 10-year period, they did, you know. And that was a great human tragedy. So that's the first. That was the. I was sick of writing human rights reports, sick of talking to journalists. You know, I spoke to ex-CIA, I spoke to ex-soldiers, I spoke to Contra. I actually spoke to some people who murdered people, you know, and I saw how they were damaged and destroyed by it. And the thing about story is you can go into those complexities, you can try and untangle it, you know. And the great tragedy now, of course, is what's happened in Nicaragua is that many of those revolutionaries from that period have turned into the monsters that they once were. But that takes a lot of untangling how Ortega just now and his wife have become the horror figures that they're trying to replace. But I think one aberration leads to another, but the central point was
there was the possibility of a very progressive revolution. They taught their population to read and write. They wiped out polio. I saw all this. Young teachers are going out into the countryside to teach their fellow citizens to read and write. What a beautiful project to do. And that's what the United States set out to destroy. And they did. And they didn't want a successful transfer of power to go to the rest of Latin America. That's why they destroyed this little country of only 3 million people. It's almost mind-boggling to see this. So we've always had fake news from that period of time. I think the great difference now, Michel, is that what we see is absolute, they don't even try to hide it now, absolute impunity. There's the United States just attack the ICC, the International Criminal Court. They've targeted by legislation the people who are trying to uphold the Geneva Convention and all the basic human rights organisations, and they're being attacked now by United States supported by Israel. You know, Mossad is try to frame some of these people. I mean, they're like the mafia. You know, and are we going to see films about this? You know, I very much doubt it. Can you imagine seeing a film like that that actually looks at power head on and does it? You know, and why not? You know, how do we, you know, it might be a possibility somehow, but, you know, you will never get many films who will deal with this. You know, it's much easier to go and look at the totalitarian regimes of Eastern Europe, which they were. You know, that's a nice, easy, popular film to make. But when we do tough ones about, you know, hiding genocide in the so-called democratic West, we won't see that.
I do solemnly swear that to the best of my ability, I will support and defend the government of the Irish Republic.
Did you see our position when you came over the crest of that hill? You did not?
Die tragisch-irisch Geschichte musste Paul Laverty, beau von einem schottischen Pub an einer irischer Mann, besonders berühren. Am Mittelpunkt von The Wind That Shakes the Barley, ein Loach Laverty-Film von 2006, stehen zwei Brüder, die ugangs den 1920er Jahren zusammengehend Briten auf hier die irische Unabhängigkeit kämpfen, hier sie sich da kurz drauf am irischen Bürgerkrieg als Feinde gegenüberstehen.
God preserve Ireland if ever your kind take control.
Oh, you better start getting used to it.
Heuer erzählte Paul Laverty über die Kontroverse, die der Film in Großbritannien ausgelöst hat, vor allem die Negativreaktionen von den Konservativen über eine geschichtliche Vision, die nicht an die Krone passt.
Essentially, when there is war, there's conflict. And that raises really, really big questions about power. You know, we did a film called The Wind That Shakes the Barley. Cillian Murphy, wonderful actor who just recently won an Oscar last year. We had a wonderful cast and crew in it. But it was very interesting when that film won the Palme d'Or. The Tory party in the Great Britain went crazy, absolutely crazy, insulting Ken with all sorts of, you know, why does this man hate his own country? But what they detested so much about it was, because the film changed the narrative of how we have traditionally viewed empire. You know, Britain likes to think that we brought civilization, that we brought the rule of law. But what we did in Ireland, you know, was subjugation. And what we did in India and Egypt and Africa, many of those countries, it was subjugation and violence and viciousness. And because we had that in the film, it was a war story, that's what infuriated them.
So it was very interesting to see. There was a guy called Michael Gove who became Minister of Education in the Tory government. You know, and I'm paraphrasing what he said was, talking about us, the filmmakers, he said, the great lie was these people presented a story of Republicans, and the Republicans always had a peaceful way out, but they always chose the violent path. But what we actually showed in the film was, in the election of 2018, 75% of the delegates were won by Sinn Féin, 75 out of 105 who voted to break with the British Empire. So it was a democratic tradition, you know, it was a democratic decision. And then when that wasn't implemented, Irish people started to demonstrate about it, started to read about it. British destroyed their books, they beat them up, threw them in prison, and out of that came the War of Independence, you know, in the 1921. And then the British realised that they were never going to defeat the Republican movement, so what they did was they divided it, and they've always been great at divide and rule, you know. So they're great stories, you know. I mean, it's an incredible story about how human beings operate. It's about, you know, it's about colonialism, it's about violence, it's about telling lies, it's about war. And at the end of the day, when you tell a story like The Wind That Shakes the Barley, you know, you see how war touches people, how it breaks people. And I don't think I could have written The Wind That Shakes the Barley unless I'd seen the war in Nicaragua, because I saw how war destroys people, it breaks their spirit, how it damages them, even the people who are the perpetrators. How it affects them. So I think as a filmmaker, you draw on everything, you know. And we did another one about the war in Iraq, and like you say, the old Irish. Yeah, root Irish. Uh-huh. You've done your research, eh?
I've seen all these.
Well, it's very humbling. Thank you for watching them.
There are no memorials in this country to men like Frankie. In my book, these men are the unsung heroes of our time.
On the 17th of September, it was on Root Irish.
I think it's important that you all understand that Root Irish is the most dangerous road in the world.
Zwei Kantitsfreunde von Liverpool an den Engestärs zusammen am Irak, am Dienst von einer privaten amerikanischen Söldnerfirma. Während der Fergus irgend von Zriggers stiefte Frankie am Lauf einer Mission auf der sogenannten Route Irish, der demnächst besonders gefährlicher Straße zwischen der Stadt Bagdad und dem Flughafen. Route Irish ist auch den Titel von diesem Loach Leverty-Drama von 2010. Wie der Fergus den Tod vom Freund will abklären, findet ihn heraus, dass Söldner eine Gruppe von irakischen Zivilisten kahlblütig ermordet haben.
Trying to avoid a scandal. That could jeopardize millions worth of contracts.
I'll go to the police, I'll go to the papers.
They close ranks, they always have, they always will.
What can we do?
Just give me some more time.
Hi, schwätzte Paul Leverty über de falsch verstandene Kriegsheldentum, auf wen der Preis dafür muss bezahlen.
This idea of, you know, the simple, you know, heroism in war is far too convenient, because it just causes so much misery and so much pain. You know, in Iraq just now, I mean, there's still people born in Fallujah 20 years later, long after Tony Blair is retired. You know, that idiot Bush out cutting his branches in his ranch somewhere in Texas. There's still children today in Fallujah born deformed because of the toxic poisons from that war. You know, the uranium shells, the dust. Still to this day, children are being deformed. So essentially, at the end of the day, I think war is always just a lack of imagination, how it plays out in ordinary people's lives. And if people ever get a chance to look at a book for this wonderful woman called Svetlana Lichevich, who won the Nobel Prize for Literature 5 years ago, it's a book called Boys in Zinc. It's actually about Soviet soldiers fighting in Afghanistan. But it's so good, so convincing, so insightful, so brilliant. And you know that the young men in Russian trenches today and the young men in Ukrainian trenches today, both sides are going through this, and they pay the price. They always pay the price, you know. And so I think at the end of the day, war is the greatest lack of imagination, because they don't see how not only does it affect the people who fight it, but the future generations as well. I mean, I shudder to think what's going to happen now with the children in Gaza, you know. How many orphans, how many people, lives have been destroyed. You know, how will that trauma pass on unto the next generations, you know? Something that was just so unnecessary, you know, and so violent, so brutal, you know, and You know, we are strange creatures. So I think that's the wonderful thing about drama. You can try and dive into all that and try and untangle it, you know, try and look at the greys and the different nuances and essentially how power operates and how violence operates. So maybe that's why we've been drawn again and again to war themes, yeah, which I'd forgotten about. Needs the outside eye. You're a good journalist.
Throughout your common work with Ken Loach, you've applied, an extended definition of war. War also in the field of economy, market economy, the powerful who wage war against the workers and the workers who are forced to wage war against each other. So war is infusing your whole work.
Well, it's these are all good questions, but I think as citizens... Well, first of all, I should say, you're trying to make a film, you're trying to tell a good story, you know? You know, Bertolt Brecht said, you know, if there's no fun, there's no show. That doesn't mean it never has to be a comedy, but the story and the narrative and the premise must come first, otherwise you'll bore people to death, and it becomes like a thesis, and it simply makes it black and white, and life is very, very complex. But the beautiful thing about story is, and it's always fascinated me and Ken, and you know, what a wonderful collaborator and what tremendous luck I had in my life to have crossed paths with such a, not only a brilliant filmmaker, but a brilliant man, You know, a man who's really bright, funny, intelligent, with a real hinterland to him. I mean, that's a joy. That's the wonderful thing about cinema. But essentially, I suppose we're asking, really, how does power operate in our lives?
You name it, I've done it. Concreting, plumbing.
Is that you too?
I've done it all.
Why'd you give it up?
He's just gone from job to job.
There's always someone on your back, isn't there?
Come on, we've got time to make up, let's go.
I'd rather work on my own now and be my own boss.
Let's just get a few things straight at the start, though, shall we?
De Ricky an Debbie, eng Koppel mat zwe Kanner vun Newcastle, musse kucke fir iwwer d'Tronnen ze kommen. De Ricky setzt sech mat senger weißer Kamionett an den Dingscht vun engem Zutreter, déi Pack fir Amazon liefert. Ihrerseits zielt Debbie net méi hier Erbechtstonnen als Infirmière. Beit Ältere sinn der musse vun den deels degradante Kontrainte vun ihren Jobben absorbéiert, dat ze hier Familie aus dem Blick verleieren, mat dramatische Konsequenzen.
This decides who lives and who dies.
You were storm.
It wasn't me, it was your mum.
She said it's for Mr. Campbell.
Robert, no. Keeps on parking in my parking space.
I don't get paid till they get delivered.
It's my night or my family, it's a no. I'm not doing it.
I'm still with some problems with my teenage son.
Have you been on the train tracks and the roofs?
This 2 days in a row.
Just knuckle down.
This is another £100 fine and a sanction.
Otherwise, you're just going to end up like... Well, thank you.
Scheinselbstständigkeit a Prekariat, die modernen Formen von wirtschaftlicher Ausbeutung, sind Sujet von Sorry We Missed You von 2019, ein Filmimpuls von der Zeit.
How does your company get away with this? This is my family.
Thanks for the great day.
And I'm telling you now, nobody messes with my family.
Hei schwätzt Paul Leverty iwwer seng Recherchen, fir ene Schofer am selwechte Fall, wie se Personage Ricky begleet huet, an iwwer e Wirtschaftssystem, deen eso vun de Räichen amächtege gewollt ass, programméiert wie en Algorithmus.
You know, we all see the Amazon van driver going round in his white van. But the question is, you know, what is before that? You know, I spent time with these drivers. I went out with them. You know, I could see the greyness in their faces at the end of the day. You know, like 50 years ago, we earned the right to the 8-hour day. I was going out with some of these guys who were working 14 hours a day. You know, taking, you know, these high, you know, energy drinks, not even having enough time to eat properly, not having enough time to go for a piss, you know. That's not an accident. That's an algorithm, you know. So what those algorithms had done was tied that man on this white van, you know, to that van, depending on the different type of contract they have. But not only that, but convinced them that he was an entrepreneur of the road. This was good for him and his family. You know, William Blake many years ago talked about mind-forged manacles. You know, William Blake, the great mystic poet. And that's what we've done, and that's what technology does. It's so powerful. Trade union, that's bad for you. They're going to steal your money, you know? And meanwhile, you create an algorithm where a human being is pushed to the absolute last, you know, part of his breath and energy to make money for Jeff Bezos. Is it any surprise he is the second richest man in the world, you know? And not only that, but then we have a narrative in business. All you have to do is listen to the business programs. You know they celebrate it, you know? They celebrate this model and they call it freedom. You know, now, to me, it's just, all you have to do is spend just one day with these drivers and you'll see the lies. You know, but it's amazing just how the narrative is set. And so I think you're right. To me, that is violence. It's economic violence, you know. But it's very, very sophisticated and very, very clever. You know, I do admire their brains, you know, but we have to have equal imagination to try and, you know, build a society. I don't want that to happen to my neighbour. I don't want my neighbour or my family or my son or my uncle. I don't want anyone to live a life like these young drivers. I met several of them, you know, when the film came out and they had mental health problems. No wonder. If you're tied to that type of job and working at that level and have so little control and you're being monitored and checked and you're just pushed to those limits, it doesn't have to be that way. It doesn't have to be that way. Is it beyond us to invent a different algorithm, you know, where we can, you know, just have a humane balance, you know, in people's lives. You know, it'd be better for everyone, because these people go on then to be disabled or a family's affected. They give up work. I mean, I talked to many of them. You know, I talked to one wonderful woman, and her husband was a moderate problem with diabetes, perfectly treatable, but because he was tied to the van, and for every single day that he didn't turn up, he was charged £150. And because he couldn't get replacement drivers, but they'd come and say, oh, you can just get a replacement driver. The route was so difficult and so fast and so quick, you know, he couldn't find someone to do it. And then he missed a couple of doctor's appointments because he couldn't pay the £150 fine. Then he got sicker, and people saw him getting more and more sick all the time. His wife, his family, a supervisor. And then over the Christmas period, he worked so hard, tied to the algorithm, he died. This is a man in his early 50s. You know, and people just couldn't believe it was happening in front of their eyes. Tied to the algorithm, tied to the contract. This was a big French delivery organisation, DPD, big French multinational. You know, but they're all at it. Then they change the rules after this, you know, and then they moderate it. But at the end of the day, it's still the same model. You know, but what you do is... Now, you're right, that is systematic economic violence, you know. You know, in the old days... You know, times of Carnegie and the big steel factories in the United States. 10,000 people worked there. There were furnaces, and you know, everybody could see it. People were there all together, but the vans are all separated, and we see each one in the road. But it's actually an army of workers all around Europe who are living their lives like that. You know, some more or less, but the nature of the precarious work, you know.
Peace and joy and love and pleasure. pleasure. A fond kiss and then we sever.
How come they're getting all that stuff?
I've lost everything. I've left a war zone.
She's taking your photo there.
You better delete that photo.
They're just kids, man. Let them get in the house and get settled, man. I'm really sorry that happened. Can't say I'm surprised. If you hear the stuff that come out within the pub.
This has become a dumping ground, lads.
An enger Klänger von der ökonomischer Krise zerstörter Städte Nordengland hält den TJ Ballantyne, ein Mann von um die 60, sein Pub, den Old Oak, so gut es geht um Leben. Die Wirtschaft, die nach von einer Handvoll regelmäßiger Klienten besicht wird, wird ihr best in Zeiten handelt sich. Mit Erinnerung und Solidarität zwischen den Minenarbeiter wird weiterhin durch aufrechterhalten. An und diese Solidarität will den TJ zusammen mit einer Gruppe von motivierten Freunden appellieren, wie eine Gruppe von syrischen Flüchtlingen an der Wirtschaft kennt. Die Old Oak von 2023 aus dem Paul Laverty seine 16. Kollaboration mit Ken Loach, an dem sei voraussichtlich der letzte Film.
My mother always said that.
Some of the locals are struggling too.
Everywhere is closed. Even the school's gone. We can't even look after our own.
It's all from back worse, isn't it?
Imagine if all the families mix and start to eat together. If you eat together, you stick together.
God, what? God, what?
The village, the old oak.
We need this.
It's like a bloody refugee camp.
Watch your mouth, Carl. It's not charity. This is solidarity. This is about... We'll do something together.
It takes strength to build something new. It takes strength to build something beautiful. Shukran. Do you know what shukran means? It means thank you.
Shukran.
Shukran.
And this is what was really interesting when I went to the mining towns with the old oak. I went back to these old towns and, you know, way back in the 70s and 80s, I'm not going to romanticise the work. It was very, very tough work. Mining was a really difficult job and it had to change, especially for climate reasons now. But the people who worked there, they had an eight-hour day. They had a trade union. There was a real sense of cohesion in the communities. They had their football club, they had their jazz club. You know, they played in their brass band. You know, they had a welfare hub. You know, it was a rich community. You go back to some of these mining towns now and it's just, you know, decimated. You can buy a house for £5,000, you know, and literally local authorities down south are buying up these properties like in the Old Oak, sending the problem families up there, just getting rid of the problems. And then the people who live there, you know, feel like, you know, they've been shat upon, you know, and then they dump refugees from other traumatised people into the area. And then they're surprised when people react badly, you know. So again, there's a kind of a, there's a systematic violence to it. Instead of like coming together to solve the problem and disentangle it, you know, and that's what was the lovely thing about the volunteers I met there, who became the protagonists, you know, of our film. You know, the people who held out their hand of friendship to the Syrians, but also realised the local kids needed to do something, and then they started, you know, eating together. I didn't make that up. I saw that, and brilliant people who had the imagination and the hopefulness to say, right, we're going to change our lives. You know, so a story can amplify that, you know. But underneath it was, you know, there was a huge canvas. There was the war in Syria. There was the, you know, the miners' strike in 1984 when we lost all that power. And then there was the disintegration leading to precariousness. And, you know, if it hadn't been for the miners' strike in 1984, we probably wouldn't have had all these people in precarious work driving these vans like in Sorry We Missed You. The legislation had changed, protectors' rights had changed, but the politics had changed. And also what always fascinated me, like I talked about to you earlier, is what changed in our minds when we started celebrating that. When I met those drivers, you know, when they start off, they think they're entrepreneurs and warriors of the road, they think they're doing this for their family, to they realise they're being destroyed. Now that's kind of fascinating how the rich and the powerful can do that, how they can create the world in their image for their benefit. You know, it's like Trump just now. You know, he's talking about cutting here, cutting there. What they're going to cut is the wage bill for the richest people in the United States, you know? And there's all these distractions all around the world, you know, all around their politics. But what they're, you know, the biggest cuts will be to tax for the rich and the powerful in the United States. Who's talking about that, you know? So Trump is an expert at deflection. And Musk as well, although he's not getting all his own way. I'm glad to see.
So this is unfortunately the final word. Thank you very much, Paul Abbott.
Hey, Michel, it was a real pleasure talking to you. Thank you, a genuine pleasure. Thank you.
Today at Old Trafford, it's the return of Eric Cantona, the most talented, temperamental and talked about footballer in Britain.
An dat wäret fir de SB-Radio iwwer de Paul Laverty. Merci fir d'Nolauschteren, a bis eng aner Kéier.
night, the struggle continues. Victory is certain.
This is Radio Freedom.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight. Preacher man, don't tell me heaven is under the earth. I know that you don't know what life is really worth. He said all the glitter is gold. Half the story has never been told. So now you see the light. Stand up for your rights. Get up. Stand up. Stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight. People think that great God will come from the sky, take away everything, make everybody feel high. If you know what life is worth, you would look right here so on earth. And now you see the light. You're gonna stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight. We're sick and tired of your ism, schism game. Dying to go to heaven in a Jesus name. We know, we understand, Almighty God is a living man. You can fool some people sometime, but you can't fool all the people all the time. So now you see the light. We're gonna stand up for our rights. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight. Don't give up the fight. Don't give up the fight. Don't give up the fight.
Thank you.
Genie Ardauer.
Hanna den Tein, den Opus 100,7 Podcast honrem die nei Musik mam Dirigent Piet Brosius.
Komponistin Katrin Konz begeistert Nullerstra immer mit ganz viel Begeisterung und viel Kreativität. Dass dabei auch die ganz jung Nullerstra nicht zu kurz sollen kommen, und wie kann der Musik lauschen an sie entdecken, das erzählt mir die Lützebäuerische Komponistin an diesem neuen Episode.
Der neuen Episode vom Opus 100,7 Podcast Hanna den Tein. Hallo online auf www.opus.radio.
Radio 100,7.
An Domazone herzlich willkommen für ein Konzert Euroradio, bei dem wir als Sauderbank Rees an den Norden von Europa beginnen. Wo genau du hier geht, an welcher Komponist neben dem Franz Schubert im Programm steht, verroden ist ich geschwind. Am Mikro ist der Jeremy Ney, an der Lautstadt der Radio 100,7 an Opus 100,7. Dieser Konzert ist den 12. Mai 2023 von Sveriges Radio an der Bärwaldhallen zu Stockholm abgeholt worden. Dementsprechend spielt er noch das Swedish Radio Symphony Orchestra an der Leitung von Herbert Blomstedt. Nun lauschen könnt ihr das Konzert bis zum 27. April 2025 an unserer Mediathek um www.opus.radio. Lohun ist den zweiten Komponist von diesem Konzertprogramm schon indirekt verroden. Wo gauft das Konzert schon mehr gespielt? Richtig, an